This is Lemuel Gulliver again, bringing you the tale of my voyage to Brobdingnag. 2 months after my return from Lilliput, I again left my native country and set sail in the good ship Adventure, which was bound for Surat. All went well until we met a heavy and peculiar storm, which carried us about 500 leagues to the east, so much off our course that not even the oldest sailor on board could tell where we were. In trying to rediscover our course, we found land instead. This was on the 17th day of June, 1703. So we cast anchor, and our captain sent a dozen of his men in the longboat to explore the country and get some fresh water. I asked to go with them, and when we arrived, we could find neither a river, nor a spring, nor any sign of inhabitants. The other men wandered inland in their search for water, alone in another direction. The country was completely barren and rocky, and since I found nothing interesting, I decided to return to the shore. And when I arrived, to my horror, I saw the rest of the crew in the longboat running back to the ship. Well, I was about to swim after them when I saw a huge creature the size of a giant walking after them as fast as he could. He was far from shore, yet the water came only to his knees, and though we took enormous strides, our men managed to keep out of his reach. I felt I dared not stay on the shore any longer, so I ran as fast as I could up a steep hill, where I could overlook the country. On the other side, I saw it was fully cultivated, but what surprised me most was that the grass was at least 20 feet high. Further on, I found what I thought was a high road, upon which I walked for some time. I could see little on either side, for I discovered I was in a field of corn which was 40 feet tall. Suddenly, I saw a monstrous form coming toward me. I was struck with fear and astonishment. Then I heard him call out in a voice that sounded like thunder, upon which 7 giants like himself started walking in my direction with enormous sharp hooks in their hands. Desperately, I lay down in an effort to hide myself, and my mind wandered sadly to memories of my wife and children, for I thought my end had come. Suddenly, one of the monsters came so near that I thought surely I would be squashed to death under his huge foot. I screamed as loud as I could, and the creature stopped short, looking around to see where the noise had come from. At last he discovered me, reached down and picked me up. Then he held me close to his eyes. I decided it was better not to struggle, for he held me about 60 feet above the ground, and if I moved, he might be tempted to drop me. I simply put my hands together and spoke to him in a pleading voice, begging him not to throw me down. I shed a few tears and tried to let him know he was pinching me by holding me so tightly. He seemed to understand, for he put me gently into his pocket and took me to his master, who, I believe, was a farmer. He then handed me to the farmer, who examined me carefully. Believing I was some tiny animal, he put me on the ground on all fours. But I stood up immediately and began to walk slowly back and forth to show him that I didn't intend to run away. Then the rest of the group sat about me in a circle. I took off my hat and bowed to them. Then I fell on my knees and lifted up my hands. Well, the farmer seemed convinced I was a reasonable creature and spoke to me often. But his voice was so loud it pierced my ears, and I couldn't understand a word he said. I answered him in several languages, but he couldn't seem to understand me. At last he spread his handkerchief on the ground and made a sign for me to step into it. This I did easily, for it was only about 1 foot thick. Then he folded the handkerchief around me and carried me to his house. When he showed me to his wife, she screamed and ran back, as women frequently do when they see a mouse. However, when she discovered I was quite harmless, she became extremely interested in me. Well, about 12 o'clock, dinner was served, and the family arrived for the noon meal. There I met the farmer's 3 children and an old grandmother. They put me on the table, and the wife cut up a bit of meat and bread and placed it before me. They were delighted to watch me eat. Then the farmer made a sign to me to come over to him, but as I walked across the table, I stumbled over a crust of bread and fell flat on my face. I got up immediately and waved my hat to show I hadn't been hurt, and went on toward his plate. But just then, one of his sons took me by the legs and held me so high I trembled with fright. But his father snatched me away from him, and thus saved my life. When dinner was almost over, the nurse came in with the giant farmer's baby. When it saw me, it began a squall that could have been heard from London Bridge to Chelsea. Intending to please her baby, the mother held me out toward him, upon which the child seized me by the middle and popped my head into his mouth. I roared so loudly that the baby was frightened and let me drop. I would surely have broken my neck if the mother hadn't held her apron under me. When dinner was over, my master went out to the fields and left me in the care of his wife. Since she saw I was tired, she put me on her bed and covered me with a clean white handkerchief, which was larger and coarser than the mainsail of one of our largest sailing ships. I slept about 2 hours, and when I awakened, I found myself alone in the vast room, lying in a bed some 20 yards wide. My mistress had left me a prisoner, for I couldn't get down off the bed. However, this was not the end, for soon her daughter, a girl about 9 years old, came in to see if I needed anything. As I learned later, her parents had given her complete charge over me, and I grew very fond of her. She was extremely good-natured and not more than 40 feet high, which was small for her age. She gave me the name of Grildred, and when I learned the language, I called her Glumdalclitch, which means little nurse. She and her mother fitted up the baby's cradle for me to use as my bed. She made me 7 shirts and kept all my clothes neat and clean. She was also my schoolmistress and taught me the language so cleverly that in a few days I was able to ask for whatever I wanted. It now began to be known around the country that my master had found a strange creature who looked exactly like a human being, walked on 2 legs, could speak in a little language of its own, and had already learned some words of theirs. One day another farmer who lived nearby came to look at me. He was so impressed that he advised my master to show me around the country, telling him he could earn a goodly sum of money by doing so. Then began a time in my life which came close to becoming a nightmare. My master decided to show me all over the kingdom, and on the 17th of August, he, Glumdalclitch, and myself set out on the journey, intending to arrive last at the royal city itself. If it hadn't been for the tender care of Glumdalclitch, I surely would have died, for day after day I was forced to perform for these giants. The girl arranged that I should be carried in a box on her lap, which she had lined with the softest cloth she could find. She saw to it that I was properly rested and fed. Often she would take me out of my box to give me some air and show me the country. So it was not too unpleasant. The journey took 10 weeks, and I was shown in 18 large towns, many villages, and to countless private families. At last we arrived at the capital, the royal city of Lolbergud, which means Pride of the Universe. Here I was shown as many as 10 times a day. However, this life did not suit me at all. I couldn't eat, and became so thin I was almost a skeleton. Realizing that I might not live much longer, my master decided to show me at court to Her Majesty the Queen. The Queen was delighted with me, and after asking general questions about my country, asked if I would like to live at court. I humbly answered that, with my master's consent, I would be proud to devote my life to Her Majesty's service. She then asked my master if he would sell me, and he quickly agreed to do so for 1,000 pieces of gold. He was paid immediately. I begged Her Majesty to let Glumdalclitch continue to be my nurse and teacher, and she agreed. Thus I began life at the court of Brobdingnag. Since the king was also pleased with me, I felt the signs were extremely good for my future. The queen ordered that an apartment should be built for me, so one of her carpenters constructed a special bedroom for me made out of a box. This was completely lined with a quilted material, while a bed, 2 chairs, a table, and a chest of drawers of the proper size were also made for me. Since the queen became so fond of me, she refused to eat without my presence. So my table and chair were placed upon Her Majesty's table, right next to the salt and pepper shakers. I had an entire set of silver dishes, a fork, knife, and spoons. Her Majesty used to put a piece of meat on my dish and enjoyed watching me carve and eat it. At first, I found it difficult to eat with the queen, for her manners were so bad. One mouthful to her was as much as 12 English farmers could eat at a meal, and the sight of her chewing was fearful to me. However, I soon became accustomed to it. My greatest trouble was caused by the queen's dwarf. Though he was nearly 30 feet tall, until I arrived, he had been the smallest person in the kingdom. Therefore, he was extremely jealous of my size and always made unpleasant remarks to me about it. One day at dinner, He was so angered by something I had said that he grabbed me in his hand and dropped me into a large silver pitcher of cream. Then he ran away as fast as he could. If I'd not been such a good swimmer, it might have gone very badly for me. The queen was so frightened she didn't think to help me. But Glumdalclitch came to my rescue and saved my life, but not before I had swallowed nearly a quart of cream. Though I received no other damage, I was put to bed. The dwarf was soundly whipped and was forced to drink up the huge bowl of cream into which he had thrown me. Though Glumdalclitch took very tender care of me, life was not without other dangers. One morning she put me in my box near a window. As I sat at my table eating breakfast, over 20 bees flew into my room. They were as large as pigeons, and I was terrified that they might sting me. Some of them seized my food and carried it away. Others flew about my head. However, I courageously took out my sword and attacked them. When they were dead, I took out their stingers and found each was an inch and a half long and as sharp as needles. I carefully preserved them to show in England if ever I should return. Glumdalclitch often took me in a coach to town when she went to shop. I was always carried there in a special traveling box with a handle on top. From time to time, she would take me out of my box so I could see things better. The coach was about the size of an English cathedral, and it tired me to walk from one end of the seat to the other. These trips were tiring for another reason, for wherever I went, people crowded around to look at me. I should have been happy enough in that country if I hadn't been so small. One day, Glumdalclitch left me alone on the lawn in the garden. Suddenly, a hailstorm came up. The hailstorms were the size of tennis balls and immediately knocked me down. I was so bruised from head to foot that I could hardly move for 10 days after. Well, some days later, a more dangerous accident happened to me in the same place. Again, Glumdalclitch had left me to roam about by myself. This time, a huge dog, a white spaniel belonging to a gardener, got into the garden and discovered me. He picked me up in his mouth and ran with me to his master. Fortunately, the dog had been so well trained that I was carried between his teeth without the slightest harm. The gardener was terribly frightened because he knew I was a favorite at court. He quickly returned me to Glumdalclitch, who was greatly relieved at finding me in one piece, as I was myself. This incident made Glumdalclitch determine never to let me out of her sight. However, from time to time, I managed to escape her. Once a falcon made a swoop at me, and if I had not hidden myself beneath a hedge, he would certainly have carried me off. Another time, I fell in a molehill up to my neck, but managed to get out safely again. Still another time, I broke my right shin by stumbling over the shell of a snail. To amuse me, the queen ordered that a tiny sailboat be made for me, as well as a wooden trough filled with water, some 300 feet long, for me to sail in. The court ladies were very helpful, for they would blow upon my sail so I could have a strong wind, and I enjoyed these adventures very much. One day when a servant was filling my trough with fresh water, he carelessly let a huge frog slip into it. No one discovered the frog until I was in my boat. Then the huge creature climbed up one side, nearly tipping it over. However, I asked Glumdalclitch to let me deal with it, and after banging it a good deal with one of my oars, I at last forced it to leap out of the boat. From time to time, the king asked to talk with me, for he wanted to learn all he could about my own dear country. I described to him, as well as I could, our houses of parliament, our courts of justice, our management of the treasury, and military defense. I finished it all with a brief historical account of affairs and events in England for the past 100 years. When it was ended, the king asked me many troublesome questions. Because his understanding and experience was so limited, he felt that our history was only a heap of rebellions, murders, revolutions, and banishments. Though I was deeply disturbed by his reaction, I covered my resentments, for I realized that this king lived wholly secluded from the rest of the world, and therefore could not understand the manners and customs of other nations. To show how narrow he was in his thinking, I shall tell you of this incident. Because he had been so kind to me, I wanted to do him a service. So I told him of the invention of gunpowder, and described how, if a spark of fire fell on a heap of it, it would cause a city as big as a mountain to fly to bits. I told him how this powder was used in guns and how it could destroy not only single men, but whole ranks of the army at once. That it could batter the strongest walls to the ground, sink ships with 1,000 men on them, tear houses to pieces, and divide hundreds of bodies in the middle while dashing out the brains of all who came near. I told him I knew how to make this powder, that it was very cheap, and that I could easily teach his workmen how to make enough of it to destroy all his enemies and their cities. Well, instead of being grateful for my offering, the king appeared horror-struck. He said he was amazed that so feeble and weak an insect as I could have such inhuman ideas. He went on to say he could not understand how I could describe so calmly such scenes of blood and desolation, and he thought some evil genius, an enemy of mankind, must have invented the powder. He then commanded me, if I valued my life, never to mention it again. That a king should frown upon such an opportunity, one that would have made him absolute master of his people, is certainly beyond my understanding. Fortunately, we in Europe have no such foolish ideas. Recognizing how primitive he and his nation were made me long to return to my own dear country and to civilization. Well, 2 long years passed by, and the king and queen decided to take Glumdalclitch and me to the south coast of the kingdom. The journey was very comfortable, for I was taken in my traveling box and slept in an especially made silken hammock. We stopped at a palace near the city of Flanflesneck. Here, Glumdalclitch caught a cold and had to stay in her room. Since I longed for the sea, a page boy was instructed to carry me in my box to the shore. When we arrived, I told the page boy he need not bother with me for a while, as I wanted to rest. So he left me and went to hunt for birds' eggs among the rocks. While I was looking out the window of my box, watching the waves crash against the shore, I suddenly felt a violent jolt and realized my box had been raised high into the air and was being carried forward with tremendous speed. I heard a noise overhead which sounded like the flapping of wings, and I began to realize what had happened to me. A giant eagle had grasped the middle of my box with his beak and was flying with me I knew not where. All of a sudden, I felt myself falling. Then I came to a sudden stop with a terrible crash. And when I regained my senses, I discovered I had fallen into the sea. Fortunately, my box was waterproof, so it floated, even though the angry waves ripped it constantly. I thought every moment was my last, when suddenly it seemed to me my box was pulled along in the sea by some strange force. This gave me faint hope, though I couldn't understand what had happened. After about an hour of such travel, my box was swiftly pulled upward and then settled down on something firm. Next, I heard a terrible grinding noise, and a saw began to cut a hole in the roof of my box. In a few minutes, there was an opening about a foot square, through which I shouted with all my might. To my great joy, I heard someone calling down in English, "If there was anybody down below, let him come up." Then the ladder was let down inside. I climbed up it and found myself on the deck of an English ship, surrounded by Englishmen. No one could understand how I happened to be in my curious box. And when I told the captain a little of what had happened to me, he looked like he thought my brain was disturbed. However, I asked him to be patient and hear my whole story. When he heard it, he seemed to believe me, especially after I showed him some treasures I'd brought from the kingdom. These included the 4 stingers from the bees, a gold ring the queen had given me, so large it fit over my head like a collar, and some needles, each of which were 1.5 yards long. The captain was, however, curious about one thing. He couldn't understand why I shouted so when I spoke. He asked me if the people of the strange kingdom were hard of hearing. I told him that the enormous size of the people had forced me to shout to be heard, and that it sounded to me as though he and his men spoke only in a whisper. I must say my first response to my countrymen was a strange one, for I thought them the most contemptible little creatures I had ever seen. The captain said that I looked at everything in wonder, and he understood why when I told him the great size of everything in the land from which I had so recently come. Well, the voyage home was a merry one, for I constantly entertained the seamen with my tales of Brobdingnag, and I think some of them even believed me. Then, on the 3rd day of June, 1706, we arrived in England, and thanking my captain for his generous treatment, I set off for my home. Everything in the country seemed so small to me, I felt I was back in Lilliput. Even my own wife and daughter appeared tiny to me, and I felt like a giant. However, before too long, I became accustomed to this new situation, and my wife insisted I should never go to sea again. And at this time, I shall conclude this second part of my unfortunate voyages.